Living of Agape this week. This week is our next segment on consciousness, and today I'm honored to have with me Dr. Amit Goswami. How are you, Dr. Goswami?
I'm good.
Thanks so much for being with me today.
I'm delighted.
Okay, as you know, this is a multi-part segment that I'm doing with you and some of your colleagues in an effort to hopefully get the world to listen to us about the nature and importance of looking into the topic of consciousness. So the first question I'd like to ask you is first to tell us a little bit about you for my listeners that haven't been fortunate enough to read your wonderful book, The Physics of the Soul. So could you just tell us a little bit about you?
Well, I am a physicist, which, of course, is the first surprise because ordinarily one does not associate a physicist with any wisdom about consciousness.
That's the truth.
But I'm a quantum physicist, and it just so happened that in the tail end of the 20th century, we found that quantum physics cannot be understood without introducing consciousness squarely in the subject, in the interpretation of quantum physics. So that's how I became involved in consciousness research. Before that, I must confess that I was fully a materialist in all shape or form, belief that everything is made of atoms, elementary particles, and there is nothing but matter. Consciousness is a brain phenomenon. But if you analyze quantum physics with that idea, you fall flat on your face. You get paradoxes that cannot be resolved. So upon worrying a few years over these paradoxes, one day a sudden insight came to me while talking to what people ordinarily refer to as a kind of people, mystic. That's the word. While talking to a mystic, it occurred to me that consciousness—if consciousness is the ground of being instead of matter, as is commonly assumed in conventional science—then the paradoxes of quantum physics all can be resolved. And not only that, there is nothing contradictory about building a science on this new metaphysics. This is what I found to be extremely surprising to me and very illuminating. We have been assuming all this time that without the materialist assumption, we cannot do science. I found that this is just not true. We have been missing half of our reality in terms of providing explanation, scientific explanation, because we have held on to this materialist dogma. But if we give that dogma up in favor of a metaphysics of primacy of consciousness, then this other half of reality, namely our subjective experiences, consciousness, love, spirituality, God, all can be included within the purview of science.
I'm curious, have you met resistance from the physics community about this?
Well, of course. That goes without saying. But, you know, the resistance is still fairly benign. The materialists mainly do not engage with this aspect of physics. In other words, they try to take the high road approach so far, although there is some science that is changing a little, and they are slightly engaging.
How do they deal with the random event generator of Dean Radin?
Well, the random event generator, of course, supports the quantum view. This is an idea that Dean Radin had, that if these random number generators are usually measure chance, whether something is through chance, a chance event, materialist event, random event, or if something has consciousness built into it in terms of intention. Radin felt that if random number generators are used in a place where lots of people's consciousness are playing, and quantum physics that says that consciousness chooses, and choice, of course, as Gregory Bateson said a long time ago, is opposite of randomness. And then Radin felt that random number generator should deviate maximally from randomness. And he verified this idea while working in very interesting situations, including when people are in a football field, like they are going to be on Sunday in the Super Bowl event. And in those situations, Radin found that the intention of people would cause a deviation from randomness. Whereas in other situations where people are scatterbrained and they are not particularly intending anything, the random number generator should behave normally.
So how does physics address that? I mean, it's actually been proven that that happens. I mean, the balls don't line up on all, you know, the majority on one side
well,
out of nowhere.
It's very simple, Eva. That today, science is very segmented. So where do you think this particular data, which branch of science would it correspond to? If you say psychology, think again. Psychology has become completely behavioristic and cognitive science in, as far as academia is concerned. Biology, no. This has nothing to do with biological beings. They don't worry about such things. Physics, definitely not. Only quantum physicists like me would be delighted with such an experiment. But who in physics worries about consciousness and intention, except a few of us who are interested in the interpretation of quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way, the scientists can avoid talking about such things. So Radin gets the label of being a parapsychologist, and, you know, parapsychology is a very restricted small field to which materialists do put some attention in, mainly in terms of degrading it, and, you know, there are debunking magazines, journals that materialists publish regularly to discredit parapsychology. But other than that, mainstream science hardly pays any attention.
Well, to be honest, that's the goal of this project that I'm doing, because if that's true, if consciousness can indeed make those balls go to one side, then it has to be true that consciousness can form peace in the world.
Yes.
So.
Yes, of course, it has to be true, and therefore, this new science, new physical principles that we are introducing, that consciousness chooses out of quantum possibilities, the actual event that we experience, that new science, this new dictum of science, new interpretation of quantum physics, is extremely important to bring directly to public attention.
That's what we're going to try to do here. So let's get started. To start off with, what would your definition of consciousness be?
So consciousness in my book is one of those quantities which you don't try to define immediately, at least. We are aware of some aspects of consciousness. That's all we can do, because consciousness is the ground of all being. Any definition that you give will fall short. Consciousness is everything there is. And so anything that you use for definition will fall short, because it is a epiphenomenon of consciousness rather than the other way around.
I totally agree. And the reason I even bother to ask that question is because I was talking to an MD a few weeks ago, and I don't know what made me ask him, but I asked him, what is your definition of consciousness? And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, well, the opposite of being in a coma. And at that moment, I realized, oh, my God, you know, we are warring in the world because people are having conversations when two people don't have a meeting of the minds over what a term means.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, of course, for him, you know, awareness and consciousness is synonymous even after more than 100 years of Freud.
Right.
So this particular doctor has never read any psychoanalytic literature, or even if he has read, he has not understood any of it.
Right.
Because how could unconscious be validated if consciousness is not present when we are in coma? Consciousness never goes away. It's that we become unaware. So what Freud really meant is that there is a distinction between awareness and unawareness. Both are states of consciousness. In one state, we have a subject-object split. We have an experience. In another state, we have no experience. But that other state makes things happen in the state in which we do have awareness. And so in psychoanalysis, we find out what those things are that bother us in our unconscious that we need to find out in order to be mentally well functioning.
Do you agree that we have three levels of awareness: sense, sight, cognitive, and self?
Well, certainly, say it again, cognitive self and what's the first one?
Cognitive, sensate, and self. And the reason I ask that question is, if that's true, and I'm using the example of Terry Schiavo here, what would be the minimum level of consciousness to be present in the world? I mean,
don't forget, though, the unconscious.
Correct. So, I agree with you, but... You know, I have a problem with these people that make a decision that someone has no right to live.
Right.
And so, what would your minimal level of consciousness you believe to be present in the world?
Minimum level of consciousness, meaning you are using the word consciousness now quite differently.
Yes, I am.
Please explain that, consciousness in the sense of conscience.
Well, it was my impression that Terry Schiavo was giving some indication that she knew she existed. You know, she gave some feedback to her nurses that she existed.
Oh, you mean, okay, I'm sorry. my mind went dense for a while. You mean this woman whose life was
being,
whether she should be kept alive or not.
Right.
These are very difficult issues. You know, that issue is an extremely difficult issue. I have written a book called The Quantum Doctor, where I address this issue a little bit. But in Physics of the Soul also, I addressed a little bit. But this is a difficult issue because consciousness is always present. Whether awareness will ever be present or not in this woman is a question that has to be settled on the basis of deep intuition. So on one hand, it is true that the brain is not functioning. It is definitely not functioning. There is no choice taken from the possibilities that are being offered in the brain. And so in that sense, consciousness has withdrawn. But if that withdrawal is temporary or not, that is the issue. If it is not temporary, of course, the person is brain dead. But sometimes it is true with modern technology. We have so many cases of it that such brain dead people, temporarily brain dead people, can be brought back. People do come back from coma. People do come back from near-death experiences, telling us great things about the near-death experience. So that being the case, if somebody says, well, these life support devices are very important and use them because she is not dead and she will be returned to awareness once again, and the quantum possibilities will be chosen from. So how do you negate that? It's very difficult. So in these situations, we have to say that, well, look, you are parents, you are prejudiced. This was the case in this case. The relatives all wanted this person to be indefinitely kept alive, and I don't blame them for wanting it because they loved this person. But the decision cannot be up to them because neither they are trained nor they are unprejudiced. It has to come from an unprejudiced person because only when the prejudice goes away can we intuit, can we connect to a level in which we are bigger than the selfish self that we are. And so only in that consciousness can we intuit whether such a person will ever return to normal awareness or not. And if not, then how far does the social responsibility, medical responsibility extend? It has to be left up to the doctor,
How can the doctors make an intelligent decision, though, if they don't understand that there are various levels of consciousness?
I think doctors, by and large, have some recognition of this non-local domain of consciousness. Remember, doctors, although they are trained materialistically and with materialistic methods such as allopathy mainly, but doctors do come to their profession primarily from the attitude of healing, of helping people. At least my experiences with American doctors generally has been very positive. And I have talked to quite a few medical students. They all come with the idea of healing people. Of course, there are a few mercenaries who come for the money. But still, there is a very large number who want to heal people. And therefore, they are open to such intuitions about people. They're not completely convinced that the purpose of medicine would be best served by keeping people indefinitely alive. And this consciousness can be grown in doctors as we engage as a society in a debate about these things. You know, in Oregon, we just had a great case at the Supreme Court where Oregon got its way with euthanasia, which is a similar issue, not completely different issue. And again, a doctor can assist a person to terminate his or her life when it becomes sufficiently vegetable, which is, of course, indirectly the issue with a person in coma.
Mm-hmm.
Is life at all when it is just a life of organs and cells and the brain is not engaged, and therefore the greatest part of our developed consciousness that a human being is capable of, the greatest part of our potential, is totally lacking from manifestation.
Well, that's true.
But you see, these issues are all connected. So, you know, the way that the today's society, we cannot decide them properly, much of it is because we try to do it in a segmented way. They are connected. And all these issues, unless these connections are dealt with, unless we deal with the totality. You know, another case, of course, is abortion protesters. You know, they are the number one supporters of capital punishment. But these things, these anachronisms, these very peculiar conflicts that people have arise because we have bought into this reductionistic philosophy, which reduce problems to individual problems, whereas the problems have a way of connecting up. Unless you take the totality, what is really a life and where does the importance of a life lies, unless you deal with that, we cannot really deal with any of these problems in a sensible manner, in an intelligent manner.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. What is your definition of mind?
Definition of?
Mind.
Mind?
Mm-hmm.
This is a very important question, by the way. Mind, following Descartes in the West, since Descartes, has been interpreted in a very general way, too general. It includes consciousness. It also includes what we normally call mentation, mind in terms of thinking. So because thinking and thinker both are included in the word mind, it has caused enormous confusion. So when I'm talking about consciousness, I mean the consciousness that is that includes the experiencer, the thinker, rather than the thinking, whereas mind is the place where thinking takes place. So mind, more explicitly, is the compartment of consciousness with whose help consciousness settles on the meaning aspect of the world. So mind gives meaning, mind helps consciousness to give meaning to physical and other beings of consciousness, other states of consciousness. Mind is the meaning giver, so to speak.
I'm going to assume that you don't believe the mind is contained within the brain, so I'm going to ask this question.
No.
Do you think the mind is contained within our electromagnetic field or within our aura, as some of the metaphysicians?
No, mind is completely different from anything material. As I said, mind is the domain of meaning. Meaning, recently we have been able to show, Roger Penrose, a great mathematician, English mathematician, has proven mathematically that computers cannot process meaning. In other words, meaning is outside the purview of the material world.
Mm-hmm.
It does not belong to the material world. So there has to be a world where the objects are objects of meaning. And this is the world that I call the mind. This is the world that traditionally we have called the mind until Descartes changed it when he included mind and consciousness together. Everything internal became mind in Descartes' term. And that has caused enormous confusion in
mm-hmm.
the West.
It has, and it really has. That's one of the problems that I'm hoping to have some insight on with this project. Do you, you know, a lot of the norm of the population walking around in the world is under the impression that the brain is the thinking mechanism. Personally, I don't believe that to be true. I think that the brain is the processor of the thinking mechanism. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we're talking about very subtle language here, but basically I sympathize with what you're trying to say. Can I make it more accurate so that it would be scientifically accurate? What you say is that the mind is the meaning giver. Brain makes a representation of mental meaning. So once the brain has represented a mental meaning, and then certainly it's possible to say that brain can process meaning, because brain can process meaning which has already been represented in the brain. Mm-hmm. So it's like brain has mental software, and we do use this brain's mental software, namely our past memory, in our thinking. We don't always use new meaning. We don't always process new meaning, which would require going outside of what we memorize, what we remember through our brain. So in that sense, a slight confusion can occur. And materialists, of course, take advantage of this confusion. They identify brain as mind, but in that, they also negate creativity completely. So what is the proof that materialists is wrong? The proof is that creativity is a very well-established experience that we have. With creativity, we certainly can change the world, disturb the universe, as Freeman Dyson once said. And therefore, this has causal efficacy. Creativity has causal efficacy, no question about it. So that proves that brain cannot possibly be mind, because mind has creative meaning in addition to conditioned meaning that the brain has already made representations of.
Well, that's actually my next question. What do you believe to be the source of creativity and intentionality?
So the source is consciousness itself. The subject that we become in a creative experience, that creative self which sometimes we call by a very holy name, like the Holy Spirit, the spirit in us, the spiritual in us, it is that which is the source to which the creativity becomes apparent, the insight comes, and the insight comes in the form of new meaning.
Personally, I'm so happy to hear a scientist admit that.
Well, it is about time. Mm-hmm. Science has not been pursuing, you know, the main job of being a human, which is to pursue, to discover the soul. And we have been ignoring the soul. We have been even ignoring meaning, it turns out. We have been talking about the mind, but because we talk about mind synonymously with the brain, we have become extremely narrow in our attitudes, in our living, and witness why we do what we do today in the society. It becomes so mundane, and day by day it becomes more mundane. Why? Because these identities that scientists sell us, we become so sold on them, practically brainwashed, that we don't want to, we forget about the new completely. We just go on repeating the same experiences. We even bring up our children to do that.
That's right, conditioning. And I believe that it is the job of the science community to bring this to the forefront, because people are taught from the very beginning in kindergarten that science is. And they're not going to, you know, with all the various religions and the warrings about what religion is right and what religion is wrong, until science tells the masses there's something more to existence than merely the brain, they're not going to listen.
Yes.
Because that's who they've been conditioned to listen to.
Yes. So it is very imperative to recognize the paradigm shift that is taking place within science. However, at the same time, let me say that, remember, all of us ultimately are that consciousness, the whole what I call quantum consciousness, which traditions have called God. We have in potentia that same potency as the God consciousness. And therefore, although temporarily we may be taken over in one culture or another culture by aberrations, by limitations, by conditioning, it is definitely not the permanent state that we are going to be stuck in. It has happened many times. We have aberrations. Otherwise, you know, Second World War and Hitler would never, you know, that phenomenon itself is a spectacular aberration. But do we say that, well, that is the consciousness that will, that is going to be identified as the human consciousness? So human consciousness is not this corrupted climate of today. It's far beyond that, and it is just a temporary disease. Materialism is like a disease in our midst, and it has to be healed, and it is being healed. Science, new paradigm of science is part of it. You are part of it by having the tenacity to get funds for such a radio show that you are doing now. So, you know, we are all playing the role of healing this, and the healing will take place. It is taking place.
Well, let's talk just a minute about, refer back to a minute to the random event generator. If it's true, and I believe that it is because I know Dean Redman, and I believe that his work, and I've read the materials on it, that consciousness can affect where those balls are, where those balls drop in that machine, then it has to be true that if the people of the world would understand that they are the source of creativity and intention, or the oneness, or the God source, or the God consciousness, that if they place out thoughts of agape or positive intent for their fellow mankind, something positive has to happen.
Yes, yes. But we also have to discover, you know, where do we fall short? And so it is important for people to recognize why our intentions fall short, why our intentions become so narrow in terms of their potentiality. And then the reason is that we do not work on ourselves to transform to that bigger consciousness. We become limited. In a limited consciousness, even when we are thinking of agape, it's just thinking. We're not feeling our heart to be expanded. We are not
right.
Feeling the energy in the heart. We are not even feeling an expansive feeling in the region of the heart in the body, you know, what mystics call journey towards the heart. Most people have forgotten these things today, especially in the technological part of the world, especially in the West. We suppress emotions, and by suppressing emotions, we lose touch with a very easy way of expanding our consciousness, namely coming down from energy in the head to energy in the heart. So in my workshops, I teach people a lot in order to, you know, just to open one's heart, how to bring the energy down to the heart when you talk to other people. When you learn to do that, then agape, unconditional love, comes to us in a very natural way. And we know it because we feel the heart to be expanded. We feel warmth in the heart.
That's right.
So with that kind of signature, then if we intend, the intention has a much better potency, much better chance of coming true. Then if we intend world peace, then it has much more of an effect than if we just do it in a thinking way. Because when we are thinking, we are already narrow. So it is just this one consciousness. Okay, so I'm thinking, but actually what is the case? Because I'm so much in my head, when my energy now goes to the third chakra, the navel, I become proud, or I become egotistic, or I myself create conflict. So this is why world peace doesn't come about, because we try to do it piecemeal. We try to do it by trying to change others, but not change ourselves. We have to do both. We have to try to change others, of course, but we have to also try to change ourselves.
I can't say anything but yes. One of the things, I'm of the opinion in some of the work that I'm doing, that if you think, you know, anytime you think a thought, it's going to cause neurotransmitters to fire and something happens. And I believe that when you think, when you go to the position of your heart with love in your heart and not just in your brain, in your mind, that it causes something to happen, like, say, norepinephrine to be produced in your body. That causes your heart to be filled with blood, and it feels good. But I also think that it changes your electromagnetic field. And if it's true that this entire world is made up of atoms, then there can't be any disconnection there. So if your electromagnetic field changes to a more positive vibrational frequency, and I mean in hertz when I say that, then it can't help but affect the electromagnetic frequency of the entire world, even because energy is subtle. Does that make any sense to you?
This is one model of it, but, you know, in my opinion, this is still quite a limited model because electromagnetic frequencies don't have, or waves do not have the one characteristic that we need for affecting other people. In quantum physics, it happens even without the aid of an electromagnetic wave or electromagnetic field. It happens because of a phenomenon we call quantum non-locality. People can get correlated. And what is so amazing, Eva, is that we are already, human beings are already quite capable of correlating with one another because we share the same consciousness. Consciousness is the ground of all being. We all come from that one consciousness. And there is now laboratory proof that one consciousness is real. In other words, although in our ordinary state of the ego, we don't experience it, but we can, in many circumstances, experience this one consciousness that we are one with others. We are connected in consciousness. There is a non-local, without any signal, signal-less connection that we share. And with that, we can influence people, even without the intermediary of electromagnetic waves.
Would that be the research that's been done on the slits with the electrons?
Well, that's part of it. That's part of the same research. The double slit experiment is a great proof that there indeed is non-locality.
I love the way you put it, that there's proof that there's one consciousness, that we are one.
Yes, yes.
So let me ask you a question on this. What are your thoughts on the manifestation of intent into physical reality? And what I mean by that is, the average person that walks on the street, they don't believe that intent is powerful, and they say, well, if I could manifest whatever it is that I intend, why can't I manifest the Rolls Royce that I've been wanting?
Yes, and of course you know that in the 70s, you know, there was a organization which used to teach how to manifest Rolls Royces, and when you fail to manifest a Rolls Royce, they promptly went to the manifestation of parking spaces in busy downtown areas. But you know, kidding aside, of course, the same problem. It's the ego, the narrowness of consciousness that keeps us from manifesting our intentions. So we fail, and we identify our limitation as the limitation of intention. Intention has the potency of that God consciousness, but we have to intend in the right frame of consciousness. If we are in the narrowness of the ego already, then our intention is not going to have any effect on the cosmic consciousness, where such manifestations are open as a possibility. But if we are wide enough, for example, in the heart consciousness that we just talked about, we become somewhat more expanded. So our chances become better. If we then arrive at mystical states of consciousness such as Jesus, Buddha, those people talked about, then we become really synonymous with cosmic consciousness, then our chance of manifesting things become even better. So it depends on how wide in consciousness do we want to be. How much expansion can we afford to be? Because in those expanded states, you know, one thing, Eva, that happens and that scares some people is that we don't want any Cadillac. We only want good for everyone. We don't want any individual gratification of the material kind. Our mm-hmm. selfishness goes away. So, you know, and people get scared of it. When they think about expanded consciousness, they don't want it because we're not ready for that yet. We only want our selfish goodies and our satisfaction of our senses. So we have some growing up to do. We are still children in terms of maturity of consciousness.
I agree with that, too. Would you think that it would also matter about how focused your intent is? For example, I believe that intent can be somewhat like a puzzle, that you can, if you have very focused intent, and I'm going to be a little bit humorous here, but say you want to manifest your Rolls Royce in your front yard, you've got to manifest, so to speak, you've got to place out there the intent of the longitude and the latitude and how you want that to come. Otherwise, the Rolls Royce might come in pieces all over, and you have to go and gather those pieces and put them together.
Very good point. One reason that the intentions in those expanded states of consciousness really do not involve such trivia as a Rolls Royce. But again, kidding aside, we really have to learn to the subtleties and the enormity of the potential that we are in. We have not even begun to endeavor into mental creativity, into discovery of new meanings. I mean, a few of us, the great artists and the great scientists and great philosophers, they do it. But rest of us are quite satisfied in just experiencing a very, very narrow range of mental meaning. So, you know, and from mental creativity to come to a place where you can play creative in the physical domain, like manifesting something that did not exist in the material domain before, you know, that's a huge order. And to even ponder it, to even think about it, takes, you know, blows your mind, because you recognize that, you know, you are literally going against the grain of materialist physics totally, because you're creating new material out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of creativity, and we think about doing that, whereas we have not even explored a much simpler kind of creativity, which is creativity of mental meaning. So we have a long way to go. That does not mean that we, become stymied, because as the Chinese proverb says, 10,000 miles journey begins with the first step. So we have to learn to be creative, and we do it now. Mentally creative first, then creative with our vital energy, energies of love, and then finally creativity at the material level.
Well, I guess the reason that made me start thinking about the focused intent was, I have a friend who is also a physicist. He worked for NASA and helped design the Apollo. And his wife knows a man who has been obsessed, and this is a true story here in Atlanta, obsessed with the Silver Cloud Blue Rolls Royce all of his life. He read every magazine article. He cut out every picture. I mean, he was literally obsessed with it. Looked in the newspaper every Sunday at all the ones that were for sale. Looked in the car magazines. And one day he saw one for sale for $50, and he just couldn't believe it. And he calls up this woman. You know, I want a Rolls Royce. Anyway, he calls up this woman, and he says, are you serious? Is this for $50? And she said, yes. So he rushed over, and he looked at it thinking maybe it didn't have an engine in it, and it was in perfect shape. So he still didn't believe it, and he took the paperwork to his lawyers, and the lawyer said, yeah, you know, it's all in order. So he bought it, paid her with a check for $50, and after he got the deal closed, he said, why did you sell that car for $50? You could sell it for $50,000. And she said, well, my husband left me for his secretary, and he left me well taken care of with money. But when he left, he moved down to our place in Florida, in Palm Springs, and he told me that the only thing he wanted me to do was sell his car and send him a check. So the point is, the guy got his Rolls Royce. He
yeah.
manifested a Rolls Royce, but what he forgot to do was manifest the money to take care of it. So he can't drive it because he can't afford the tags or the insurance or the maintenance. But he has his Rolls Royce. He forgot to manifest with clean intent.
Yeah, this is a good example of how intentions can work even at the mental level to help at the physical level. Good. Very
okay.
good example. So, you know, we sometimes, we when we intend, the power of intention also has a power to open us up to some extent. So, you know, if you want to use this man's intention as an example of how this man manifested, I don't want to object too much, you know, because we all routinely go outside of our ego occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows when his intention became a purer intention from a broader consciousness that had the power to manifest. Who knows that he didn't do that. So I wouldn't protest like a materialist steward that it's just a question of intention. It's a good story, yes.
Okay, my next question is, what would your perspective on karma be regarding this? Because, you know, let's take somebody that's in a poverty situation. Let's take somebody in let's say, in West Africa that's living in a poverty state and filth. And they sit all the time and they intend and intend and intend that they're going to have money, but that money doesn't come. So do you think that karma, assuming that karma is real, has anything to do with why it doesn't come? In other words, do you think that you are placed in this life for the God consciousness to experience certain experiences in this physical body, in this hologram, and that no matter what we do, that is the intent of this, the life in this body, as for the things that don't happen? I mean, it's just what is.
Any kind of conditioning, karma is nothing but conditioning from past lives. Any kind of conditioning keeps us from becoming expanded in consciousness. Conditioning is what produces the ego identity. Ego identity is nothing but a confluence of all of our conditioned habit patterns. So karma is just a big part of it. And indeed, it keeps us from manifesting creativity, and indeed it keeps us from manifesting intention. But karma is not compulsory. Conditioning is not compulsory. We can, in spite of karma and conditioning, be creative, and we can, therefore, expand our consciousness and
overcome
barriers to our intentions from coming true. We can do it. But we have to be, we have to know about creativity. We have to engage in the creative process, which has its own findings, and it is a very rich literature today. People can get a lot of hint about how to be creative today that didn't exist even 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is stuck in karma and conditioning, I say that wake up. Look, help is available. Use some of this help that we are offering. You know, this is the technology of the new paradigm of science. We don't have, you know, flashy things like materialist science does, but consciousness science is producing its own technology, which can be very powerful, and it's very rewarding in terms of satisfaction.
So you brought up the topic of reincarnation. Do you believe that we literally die, get put in the ground, and come back in another body? Or do you believe that we exist simultaneously all at one time?
Well, it depends.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. But maybe the reincarnation would actually be tapping into other lifetimes that's experienced simultaneously.
It depends on what language you feel comfortable with. When we say we get buried and then we come back in another body, you know, that gives us a certain picture behind, and you are subject to misinterpretation a lot. So let's just say that we die, but then this physical body is finished. Some essence, and I can be more specific, the essence that we call our soul, that essence consists of habit patterns, mental and vital, and plus what we call the soul, the supramental, some of the godliness that we also carry as potential within us. So all that continue even after our death. And then this continuation, this continued pattern, we can experience in a future time. And this is what you said towards the end in your last sentence. And so that is quite a valid interpretation of what happens in reincarnation. And data actually supports that. What we normally call the soul is not anything of a material substance or anything of that sort at all. It's not substantial. But instead, it's a pattern. It's a pattern of habits. And these patterns, if somebody else in the future uses, inherits, is another way of putting it, then somebody can legitimately be called my incarnation, reincarnation. But not in the sense of a soul traveling from my body into that body, that future body. Transmigration, etc. It's more subtle than that. And that subtlety has to be understood. So the answer to your question then is yes and no. Depends. How far do you want to go in your understanding? If you want to understand it completely, it can be done. I have shown in the book Physics of the Soul that a complete understanding today is within reach. It has been achieved. Science can understand reincarnation completely. The data is there to verify this understanding. So at that level, one can. On the other hand, you know, if you want a quicker level, there is danger that you'll misunderstand some of the steps. But still, essentially, you cannot misunderstand too much so long as you recognize that the physical body is gone. The way we carry on some of our rituals is very misleading because we think that there is something in the buried body, and you know, all those things are just tremendously misleading. The physical body is dead. It's finished. But what our more subtle aspects of ourselves, namely our vital, mental, supramental, our consciousness itself, those things live on. In particular, the patterns of those things that we collected in our life, those patterns live on in some real, very real sense, and they can be recycled. And that recycling of these patterns is what we call reincarnation.
Very good answer. Do you believe that I'm going to ask you a two-part question here. Do you believe that the consciousness is contained within the soul? And if you say yes to that question, do you believe that that consciousness soul would be contained within a frequency or a field? How would it be contained? I mean, how would it exist? It has to exist some way.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting question. I mean, because you are using frequency, which refers to wave, and that's where this language, which was an intuitive language, people who are developing that particular language, they came a little bit before this quantum theory developed. So if the language is changed just a little bit, it will get the very essential truth of what you're saying. In other words, frequency, don't take that literally, but take the idea that it's a waveness. Waveness means a potential. It's a wave in potentiality. That's what quantum possibility waves are. So the essence that I was talking about, these patterns are changes in quantum potential, changes in quantum possibility waves. So they're sort of like modulation of frequency. You know, like the FM radio, These are frequency modulation. Not the frequency itself, modulation of the frequency. So what happens is that we have similarly modulation of these waves of possibility. In other words, the probability of these possibilities are modulated by how we experience our life, how we condition ourselves, how we develop our patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it is very much like, you know, frequency modulated waves going from one region to another. It's very much like that, but it's not exactly like that. The thing has to be understood in terms of not a substance like a wave actually traveling a little distance as a signal. Instead, things has to be understood in terms of just some patterns of potentia being transferred from one place to another.
So would you repeat that? I'm going to have my producer cut that out.
Sure. I'll try.
That last sentence. I got everything but that last sentence. My phone is out.
What was the last sentence? Let me just say as well as I can, and then you can sort of patch it up,
okay.
I hope. So it is very much like the transmission from radio via frequency modulation from one place to another, except that in the real case, in the case of reincarnation, there is no real wave traveling via a signal going from one place to another. Instead, a modulation of the potential, of the probabilities of the possibility, that modulation is transferred from one place and time to another place and time in the experience, from the experience of one person to the experience of another person.
Okay. Now, remember here that I'm not a scientist, so I have to word things the best I can with this question here. Assuming information has to be carried some way in the field or the frequencies or however it is, so I want to know, Do you believe that information is encoded within these frequencies or fields in the space, in the form of time, space, pulse, intervals, and voltage? You know,
well,
say for example, you know, pulses of energy going, say, rat-a-tat-tat, then that sequence of information would mean something symbolistically in your mind. Does that make sense?
Well, yes and no. Again, the danger is that we are prone to think in terms of something actually moving in the back of a signal.
I guess what I mean is, how does our brain interpret the messages that consciousness is delivering?
It's a little bit subtle. That's all. Let me give you the actual quantum model of how this transmission takes place from one brain to another.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of thinking that one brain is emitting some electromagnetic wave which is modulated and another brain is then receiving it, for which indeed there is no evidence, and we can immediately, you know, that's the materialist argument. They immediately say, well, this we can disprove. But the problem is that we cannot rule out the phenomenon, because telepathy takes place even though you disprove this electromagnetic wave just by simply putting the psychics in electromagnetically impervious chambers. We have
mm-hmm.
done that. And telepathy still exists. So somehow the information is going from one brain to another, although it's not going with the help of electromagnetic waves. So how does it go then? In the consciousness model, it's more subtle. What we say is that the potentia that is present is in the cosmic consciousness, which is one for the two observers, two telepaths. So the communication occurs how one observer is thinking something, namely choosing something from the meaning domain, and the other observer, because he or she is correlated with the first observer, is choosing the same thing, identical or almost identical meaning, from the spectrum of possibilities that he or she is experiencing in her mind. And so the brain, that particular brain, makes a representation of that mental meaning, which then is correlated with the first observer's mental meaning and first observer's brain. This is why in the new experiments, we find that brain potential from one brain to another can be transferred without electromagnetic signals. This is the newest of experiments, and this is revolutionizing our attitude towards non-local consciousness. Because if a brain potential, electric activity in one brain can be transferred to another brain without any electrical connection, without an electromagnetic wave, then how can you deny that there is a subtle non-local connection between the two brains? And it is this connection that we call consciousness.
Very interesting. All right. My next question is, what is your position on free will? And what I mean by that is, do you believe it exists? For example, I can say that I'm going to the grocery store tomorrow at 3 o'clock. You know, that's my free will to choose that I decided I'm going to the grocery store. But in actuality, I have absolutely no way of guaranteeing that, even though I have full intention of being there at 3 o'clock, Source, or the God consciousness, whoever it is, may not see that fit for me. I mean, I may be stuck in traffic. I may have a wreck. I may get a phone call that keeps me an hour detained. My kids may start acting up, like you hear them in the background doing a little bit. You know, so in actuality, at the source of consciousness, do you believe that free will exists to do whatever we choose? If so, why can't I guarantee that I'll be at the grocery store at 3 o'clock?
That I do not know if you can ever guarantee, because that depends also on other factors, which of course are dependent on how other people are exerting their free will or not so free will.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in my opinion, you know, the word free will can be used in two ways. And you are using it one way now, which is the free will of choosing between conditioned alternatives. In other words, you have the conditioning of being able to, you have transport and you have the will to go to grocery stores and you have exercised this will many times. So you have a certain conditioning that you can go to grocery stores anytime, any day when the grocery store is open. And depending on the conditioning, you are choosing this particular tomorrow, this particular date, this particular time to go there. So it's a free will of choosing something that is already I have done, I have the brain knows, I have memory, and I can do it again. I'm choosing this particular date and time to do it. One kind of free will.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not totally free because it depends on conditioned learning that you already have accomplished. There's nothing totally free about it.
Right.
What is free will? In its essence, free will is about creativity. When you are creative, then we are exercising freedom because we are choosing something that I didn't know before. I'm choosing something that is totally new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So freedom is that which cannot be predicted, that was not experienced before, that is totally new, that we have no control on. You see what
mm-hmm.
I'm getting
mm-hmm.
at? So the first kind of freedom is important, the freedom to be able to choose in one's among one's own conditioned prerogatives is very important, and we fight for it, liberty. You know, when our forefathers said, give me liberty or give me death, they were talking about that kind of freedom. It is
right.
important, but it is not the ultimate freedom in the sense of creative freedom.
Right.
It's not freedom to create something that is completely new.
I think that we're not actually driving this car known as the physical body. I feel like we are 2-year-olds sitting in the back seat of the car strapped in a little car seat with a little yellow steering wheel. And we think that we're driving that car.
We think that we are driving, exactly.
You
and
know,
when
but
we take on that creativity, then we are really driving. And tell you the truth, human body-mind is not ready to drive that way all the time. Even people, beings like Jesus and Buddha, were not in their holy spirithood all the time, only some of the time.
That's the truth.
And when they are, you know, then they speak in parables, then they speak in words, in languages that we don't understand. Then they say things that are outrageous. I am God, you know, I am the truth, and
mm-hmm.
this causes tremendous confusion because us ordinary human beings think, how can that be like that? It's blasphemy. How can a person say things like that? And so we crucify them.
Well, I've got two more questions here that I want to ask that are a little bit off this topic that has to do with healing machines such as right frequencies and the such, and frequencies. And so what I want to ask is, you know, energy is meant to be exact. So a lot of people are using frequency machines, and they're running up, you know, to like 80,000 hertz or so. And there's nothing in your body that oscillates at a frequency of 80,000 hertz. So I believe that energy is meant to be exact to the 0.100 because it's subtle. And every little bit makes a difference. You know, if you give a light bulb too much energy, it pops. If you don't give it enough, then it's not bright enough. Of course, voltage would be involved here, though. But say, in relation to healing and frequencies machines, do you believe that frequencies tendered need to be exact, say to the 0.100, since it's meant to be an exact? If not, what would happen if the machine were set to a frequency beyond that of a particular organ? For example, say a uterus vibrates at 26,572.67 and somebody submitted to it 80,000 hertz of frequency with voltage applied. What would happen to the difference in the frequency of the organ and the amount of energy that was emitted?
You are talking about
somewhere.
We were talking about a field about which I have very vague knowledge.
That's okay. I have no knowledge. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know a little bit, but I think I do have some understanding of this kind of phenomenon. It's not exactly the way it sounds. There is a very great scientist named William Tiller.
Oh, yes, I'm interviewing him, too, next week.
Oh, good. He has shown a very interesting thing that you can intend, and your intentions can be carried into material bodies, like a rod. You know, this is how divining rods in the hands of dowsers work. So what we talked about before, love energy or vital energy in general, can actually be made through our intentions correlated with material rods, and the same way these meters, these intention meters or material machines can carry our intention and vital energy through that intention. And in that sense, because they are actually waves, possibility waves, in that sense, there is some waves associated with these machines, and they can have healing power in the sense that they are then carrying vital energy, quantum possibility of vital energy from a well person who can be called a healer, good intention, to a person who needs healing, to an organ which needs healing. So in this way, we can actually give healing energy from a well organ, like a well liver, to a organ which needs to be healed, with which liver has that kind of connection. In Chinese medicine, all the organs are connected, and they know precisely which organ's vital energy will heal which other organ's vital energy. So in this way, we can carry from energy from one organ to another organ to which this energy will be a healing energy, through a machine.
I've actually been doing an experiment with Dean Radden. I don't know if you know about me, if you've looked at my website, but I'm a medical intuitive. My gift was brought about, actually, by a near-death experience.
Uh-huh.
Overnight, literally. One day I didn't know anything about it, and the next day I had it. But
I've heard of that, yes. I've read about that.
I got the schematics in my head for a little frequency machine. It's got eight. It's about the size of a garage door opener, and it's got eight little dials on it. And each little dial goes from 0 to 9, and two of the dials represent decimal points. And I asked Dean if he had something going on with his stomach, and he said, yes. And I said, do you have sharp pains? And he said, yes, I do. And I heard in my head that he had cells growing there that were abnormal, causing that sharp pain. So I heard, I don't remember what the number was, but it's something, maybe 26,000 and something. I don't remember what it was. But we set this, I hear frequencies in my head in hertz, numbers, to the point 100. And so I printed out a picture of Dean and wrote the word stomach on it and set this little frequency machine to whatever the number was that I heard back in the first week of December.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an email today from him telling me that he had no more stomach pain.
Wonderful.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Okay, my last question would be...
Can I make a comment on that?
Of course.
Time? The comment I would make is that, look, we do need this physical paraphernalia sometimes in order to trigger our intention. This fact is well known. So don't take the numbers and machines too seriously, however. But it is true that if when you do that, quantifying our intention in this way, this is what Tiller has proven so beautifully, that yes, our intentions and vital energies can be carried through machines. And machines quantify it, so it's very good to establish the intention properly, grounding it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one should not take the machine part too seriously. It's the intention that is really doing the job.
Yes, someone told me that I should just turn the machine off and see if it would do the same thing. So
I bet you that it would, but it would be more difficult to hold your intention. Whereas with the machine, it becomes very easy to hold the intention.
Oh, I see. Okay, my last question, and then I'll let you go about your work, is I would assume that every person has a different level of consciousness. Assuming that's correct, would the level of consciousness make a difference in the frequency of one's bodily organs? In other words, would everyone's organs vibrate at the same speed regardless of the frequency of their consciousness, or would it be different?
Well, you know, again, the frequency, etc., you know, I don't work with that particular model. I think they're just devices to help us intend properly. But having said that, every organ has vital energy and possibility waves associated with it in the vital energy domain. And so, indeed, these things can be very personal. these things can be, if one person can have extremely well functioning organs and energy from these organs, if it is made available to other people by using devices which might be frequency meters and so forth, could be very useful, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not negating radionics or such healing devices at all. I'm actually supporting it. Except I think that the material part of it is not the crucial important part. The important part is in the intention and the vital energy.
Dr. Goswami, is there anything that you would like to make known to the world?
Well, I would like to thank you, and I certainly would encourage everyone to undertake this grand research, consciousness research, that is personally open to every one of us. It does not require much of laboratory. It does not require expensive instrumentation. It requires a wonderful mind, a creative mind. If we engage creative and loving mind into this consciousness research, the world can change, and not taking too long either.
I thank you, and not only that, but I applaud your efforts for doing what you do.
Thank you.
Agape to you.
Thank you.
And come back and visit with me again.
That would be delightful.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.